The mid-autumn breeze blew at the back of my neck as I pushed through the door of my apartment building. Sam, the night guard, looked up from his desk and gave me a wave.
Late night, huh?
I nodded and arrived at the elevator, feeling the grocery bags I was carrying straining at the seams.
Oh, hey, let me get that for you, he said, standing up and getting the button.
Thanks, Sam, I said, hoping that bag held at least until I got to my floor. He smiled, turning up the edge of his white mustache.
No problem, Josh.
We stood there in the lobby in silence, waiting for the elevator. I watched as the numbers began counting down from 15.
Some weather we're having, huh? Said Sam.
I nodded, watching the oh-so-slowly descending elevator numbers.
Yeah, it's, getting colder out there.
Sam nodded and smiled.
God, I wished the elevator would hurry.
Sam was a good guy, but it was late, and I was in no mood for small talk. I looked back at the numbers. It was at the 8th floor now. I sighed.
Tough week.
I forced a smile and cleared my throat.
Yeah, it's just been a long one.
The fluorescent light of the lobby hummed overhead as the numbers descended. I felt Sam turn to me, about to say something else, when suddenly the quiet of the lobby was interrupted by someone pushing through the door from the street. The man stepped into the lobby, coughing violently. He stepped over to a wooden bench that sat next to the rows of mailboxes and plopped down, continuing to cough. Sam and I both turned to look at the man. He was thin, maybe mid-40s, with thinning, greasy, dark hair and a long gray overcoat that was stained with... I didn't want to guess with what. The man looked up as Sam started towards him.
Jeez, pal, you sound pretty rough, Sam said.
The man nodded and continued coughing as the elevator dinged open. Sam turned back to me apologetically.
Oh, shoot, Josh, I was gonna help you up, but...
He said, tilting his head towards the ill man. I shook my head.
Oh, no, I'm fine, I said, feeling a bit relieved.
I think he needs help more than I do. I stepped into the elevator and pushed the button with the toe of my shoe. He nodded and turned away to face the man. I heard him ask the coughing man,
Buddy, is there someone I can call for you?
But the doors closed before I could hear the man's answer. A few moments later, the elevator doors slid open on the 7th floor, and I stepped out to see a man in a baggy sweatsuit shouting and banging on the door down the hall.
Ah, damn, I sighed.
I walked down the long hallway trying to avoid the situation. Unfortunately, the situation was happening at the door across from mine. The man turned to look at me as I approached.
What?
He shouted.
You got a problem?
The door he had been pounding on swung open, and a woman stepped out into the hallway, throwing a duffel bag at his chest.
Take your shit and go,
she shouted. And that was when the grocery bags decided to rip. Cans of knockoff SpaghettiOs, Spam, ramen noodles, a jug of lactose-free milk, and other pathetic food stuff spilled out onto the floor. The fighting couple turned to look at me as silence filled the hall. I made my Jim Halpert face as I looked from them to my fallen groceries. The man shook his head.
Whatever, I'm out of here,
before storming off down the hall. I sighed and bent to start picking up my things.
Here, let me help,
said the woman as she bent to pick up a can of beans that had rolled over by her door.
Thanks. I'm Josh, by the way, I said with a smile. I live across the hall.
She nodded and smiled back.
I'm Rosa. We just moved in. Well, I guess it's just me now.
Yeah, I saw. Sorry, I said, feeling awkward. Rosa shook her head.
Don't be. He's a pendejo.
I stood and unlocked my door. Rosa helped me bring in my groceries and looked around at my messy apartment.
Sorry about the mess, I said. I haven't entertained in a while.
She shrugged.
It's fine. You should see mine. Still full of moving boxes, and only half of it's mine.
Well, thanks for the help, I said, as she turned to leave.
And sorry about the, pendejo.
She laughed.
His name is Steve.
I think I prefer pendejo, I said with a smile.
I'll see you around, Josh,
said Rosa as she smiled back and closed the door. I turned away from the door and began putting my groceries away. I went to bed that night, thinking I might like to get to know Rosa better. The next morning, when I stepped out of the elevator into the lobby, I was greeted by what was essentially an angry mob. The building tenants were in an uproar. I pushed through the crowd to get to my mailbox, only to find it empty.
No mail today,
someone shouted.
I turned to see Frank, the grumpy old Vietnam vet who lived on the floor above me, standing by the security desk.
What's going on?
I shouted. He pointed to the door.
See for yourself.
Instead of pushing through the crowd, I stepped up onto a bench to see over the bobbing heads. There were chains on the outside of the lobby door, and what looked like a heavy gauge chain link fence across the entire front of the building.
What's happening?
Asked Rosa as she stepped onto the bench next to me. I shook my head.
I don't know.
Looks like the building's been locked down.
What? Why?
She asked.
I have to be at work in 2 hours.
I was about to say something else when the building intercom squealed to life.
Attention, residents of Pine Hills Apartments. Due to a potentially contagious viral outbreak, the building is now under quarantine.
The tenants quieted, listening to the speaker. Some backed away from the crowd, looking weary. Immediately, I thought of the coughing man from last night and wondered if Sam was okay.
How long are we stuck here?
Someone shouted. I couldn't tell where the person speaking was, but I assumed that they were tapped into the intercom from the outside. That had to be listening, though, because the next thing they said was,
"We're working on a timetable right now, but due to severity of the situation, we can't give any more details. We advise you all return to your apartments and self-isolate for the time being."
The people shouted more protests about civil rights, their jobs, and other such concerns, but the intercom stayed silent. Eventually, the residents started to trickle back to the elevators and stairwells, eyeing anyone who so much as sniffed with a cold suspicion.
"Great, now I have to go call work and tell them I'm stuck in a petri dish," said Rosa as she hopped down from the bench and headed for the elevator.
"See ya," she said with a half wave over her shoulder, already looking at her phone.
Bye,
I mumbled as she left. I noticed Frank watching me from the other side of the slowly emptying lobby. I made my way over to stand next to him.
"You believe this shit?" he asked with a nod to the door.
I shrugged. "I don't know. Do you?" He shook his head, adjusted the green ball cap he wore.
"Not for a goddamn second."
"You don't think there's a virus?" I asked.
"Oh, I'm sure there is," he said in his gravelly voice. "But I think they know a whole lot more about it than they're letting on. Working on a timetable, my ass. Hell, kid, I wouldn't be surprised if they put that shit in here themselves."
I raised an eyebrow at him.
"You know how paranoid that sounds?"
He smiled.
"Hey, just because I'm paranoid don't mean they ain't out to get me."
I smiled back.
"Right."
Frank was known to be a hateful old grouch to most people in the building, but for some reason, we had hit it off. I chalked it up to us both being relatively unsociable and reclusive.
"By the way," he said, "who's your new lady friend?"
I rolled my eyes at his use of lady friend.
"Her name is Rosa. She's my new neighbor."
Frank nodded and winked.
"I can think of worse neighbors to have."
I shook my head and patted the old dog on the shoulder. "Good talking to you, Frank. I think I'm going to head up now." He nodded.
"Sure. But hey, Josh."
I turned back to face him.
"You be careful, all right?" he said seriously. "And if you need anything, anything at all, you know where to find me."
I nodded my thanks and headed for the elevator. When I stepped onto my floor, the first thing that struck me was the silence. It stood in stark contrast to the uproar that had been going on down in the lobby. As I walked down the long gray carpeted hall, a sound caught my ear. I stopped just outside Miss Johnson's door and listened to the coughing that came from within.
"Damn,"
I thought. She sounded terrible. Part of me wanted to reach out and knock on her door to ask if she needed anything. But after a moment of hesitation, I listened to the voice of caution in my head and walked away. The rest of the day passed without much event. I sat on the couch, ate junk food, played video games, and watched TV. I thought about going across the hall and asking Rosa if she wanted to watch a movie or something, but decided against it. They had said to self-isolate, after all. It was around 9:30 p.m. when I heard a knock on my door. I looked through the peephole to see Rosa standing there, a concerned look on her face. I brushed crumbs off my shirt and gave a glance around to the apartment that I still hadn't cleaned and opened the door.
"Hey," I said. "Do you hear that?"
she asked, pointing down the hall to Miss Johnson's door. From out of the hall, I could hear that the coughing had gotten significantly worse. I grimaced.
"Holy shit. I heard her coughing earlier, but it was nowhere near that bad."
"Should we do something?" she asked. I shrugged. "I mean, I guess we could call 911, but with the lockdown,
I don't know if they'd even come. That's the other thing, said Rosa, turning to face me. Do you have any service? I turned and picked up my phone from the counter. No signal. Huh, I muttered. No, I got nothing.
I don't either, she said, coming in and sitting at my table. I've been trying to call work all day, but I can't get any reception.
I sat down at the table across from her. That's weird. Yeah, maybe a tower's down or something. She shrugged.
Maybe. Odd timing, though.
I was thinking the same thing. Frank's paranoid mentality had begun to rub off on me. So, what do you do for work? I asked, changing the subject.
ER nurse, she said. That is if I still have a job. I'm way late for my shift.
Well, that sounds exciting, I said.
It can be,
she said with a nod.
What about you?
Nothing exciting at all. I'm a writer. Well, a journalist, actually, I said.
Oh, anything I might have read?
She asked. I shook my head. Not unless you make a habit of reading about local dog shows or the new flagpole at City Hall. Suddenly, we heard the sound of a door flinging open down the hall, accompanied by violent, racking, wet coughs. Rosa and I stood slowly and stepped over to my still open door. Peeking around the door jamb, we saw Miss Johnson stumbling down the hall. She was bent over, hacking up dark chunks of viscous fluid. She looked up at us, tears running down her face. The same dark ooze dripped from her nose. And then she broke into a dead sprint down the hall, straight at us. I grabbed Rosa, who had been stepping out into the hall, and pulled her back into my apartment. I slammed the door shut and turned the deadbolt. Miss Johnson began pounding violently on the heavy door, coughing and screaming. What the fuck? I exclaimed, stepping back from the door. Rosa didn't speak. Her eyes were fixed on the door as it shook from the battering of an 82-year-old woman. We stood there in shocked silence as the banging on the door slowly stopped. After a moment more, we heard footsteps receding down the hallway. When Rosa finally did speak, all she said was,
Can I stay here tonight?
I nodded, wordlessly. The building intercom sounded.
Attention, residents of Pine Hills. Do not open your doors. Do not check on your neighbors. Do not leave your apartments. There is a biological vector inside the building.
We looked at each other in shocked disbelief. What the hell was going on? I offered Rosa my bed, but she refused, opting to sleep on the couch instead. The next morning, we ate cereal and flicked through the local news stations, hoping to see something about our building and what was going on. But there was no coverage of our situation at all. I was sure Frank would have something to say about that. I turned to Rosa on the couch and asked, You work at the hospital, right? Do you have any idea what's going on? What contagion that could have been? She set down her bowl and shook her head.
I mostly deal with cuts and broken bones, stomach flu at the worst. I've never seen anything like that.
I don't understand how she was so fast. And her strength. I was worried for a minute that she would knock the door down. I said. Rosa nodded.
And did you see the look in her eyes? She looked more like a rabid animal than a person.
We sat there in silence for a moment.
Is there another way out of this building?
She asked after a moment.
I have a really bad feeling about all this.
I thought about it. Maybe the fire escape. She nodded, stepping over to the window.
Holy shit,
she muttered. What? I asked, getting up to go see out the window. We realized then that the fire escape wouldn't work. On the building rooftop across the street was a man with a scoped rifle. I moved to another window and saw the same thing on the next building.
Surely they wouldn't,
she began. Yeah, I said, cutting her off. The image of Miss Johnson flashing in my mind. I think they would. We spent the rest of the day sitting around, talking, eating more junk food, and wondering when this would all end. Every once in a while, I could have sworn I heard movement from out in the hall. But when I looked out of the peephole, I saw nothing but the dark stains on the carpet, left behind by Miss Johnson. That night, we ate a frozen pizza and watched old reruns of The Twilight Zone. If the situation had been different, it actually might have been sort of romantic. As it was, we were both jumping at every sound from within the building. At some point, we had both dozed off there on the couch. Sometime later, my eyes blinked open to the sound of something thumping around from somewhere inside my apartment.
I sat up and looked around. Rosa was still asleep, curled up on the other side of the couch. I stood and was about to search the apartment when the sound stopped. I scratched my head and headed for the bedroom when the sound came again. Something fleshy, sliding against something metallic. I glanced up to the oversized air duct on the ceiling. Something was up there. It moved through the duct, slowly and clumsily. I stepped over to the couch, tapping Rosa on the shoulder.
Rosa! Rosa, wake up!
She turned over and stretched, mumbling something sleepy. Whatever was in the duct reached the vent over the kitchen, and dark, oozing fluid began to drip down onto the tile floor. I leaned over and shook Rosa hard.
Rosa, wake the fuck up! Something is here!
Her eyes shot open, and she leapt up just as the vent collapsed, and the thing fell to the floor with a wet slap. We stood in the front room, looking into the kitchen as it crawled across the floor. It was Yan, the yoga instructor from down the hall.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public would be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Or at least, it used to be. I only recognized him from the mess of curly blonde hair he still had. His body was stretched, smashed, and bleeding. Bones and joints had snapped and relocated until he was compact enough to worm his way through the tight duct. His head rotated around to look at us, a hungry leer on his bearded face.
What the shit?
Rosa screamed. The sound of wet bones creaking and popping began as his arms and legs tried to move back to their original positions. I grabbed Rosa's hand and ran for the apartment door. We stepped out into the hall, shutting my door behind us.
Where do we go?
She asked.
I left my keys on your coffee table. Shit.
I breathed. Come on. We started down the hall, knocking on every apartment door we came to, but no one answered. Suddenly, Rosa's door flung open and Steve stepped out. Apparently, he had never actually left the building.
Hey, what's...
He started. My door opened and Yan stumbled out into the hall. Both his arms were somehow contorted to the same side of his body. His torso looked twisted halfway at his midsection and his legs hadn't taken their correct shape. Steve shouted and tried to back away from the misshapen man, but Yan was too close and too quick. He grabbed onto the shocked man's face and bit into him. We watched in horror as they fell to the floor in a heap of thrashing limbs. Steve screamed as Yan tore at him with his hands and teeth until he went silent, a pool of blood slowly spreading on the floor. I couldn't understand what was happening. What the hell kind of virus did this? Yan looked up at us from Steve's mangled body. He smiled, a wet, toothy smile, and then plunged his arms and then his head into Steve's chest cavity. I bent over and puked on the gray carpet as the two bodies began to roll across the floor, slamming into the walls with the wet sounds of rippling flesh and cracking bones. Then, the fucking thing stood up. Yan had contorted himself inside Steve's body, biting and ripping holes from his head and twisted limbs. Somehow, the flesh combines to form an amalgamation of the two men that crawled toward us. At first, it was unsteady on its eight twisted and broken limbs, but the thing soon picked up its pace, and it skittered down the hall after us, its two sets of teeth chattering loudly.
Josh,
said Rosa, looking at the Yan/Steve thing as it rushed toward us.
I know, keep trying,
I said, pounding on the next door, then the next.
Help us!
I shouted.
Somebody, please!
Shouted Rosa as she kept knocking. Jan/Steve let out creaking gasps as it hobbled after us, dark fluid pouring from its mouths. Then, the elevator on our end of the hall dinged. We turned as the doors opened, and a man stepped out, wearing a gas mask and holding a pistol. He fired at the thing over and over, until one, then the other, of its deformed heads blew off in chunks.
Move your asses,
shouted the muffled yet familiar voice of Frank. We ran for the elevator as we heard something large moving at the other end of the hall. We turned to look once we were inside. There, coming around the corner of the long hallway, was something I had no room for in my mind. It was a conglomeration of flesh. The doors slid closed, and Frank hit the button for the top floor.
What the fuck is going on, Frank?
I asked, trying to catch my breath. He looked at us for a moment before peeling off the gas mask.
Guess it ain't airborne then, seeing as how you two ain't infected,
he said, reloading his pistol and tucking it into his belt.
What kind of virus does that?
Rosa asked. He shook his head.
I don't know. My contact on the outside wouldn't tell me.
Contact? What contact?
I asked.
The one that owed me a favor for some sketchy shit that went down back in Nam,
he said, meeting my eyes.
And that's all I'm saying about that for now.
Where are we going?
Asked Rosa. Frank smiled.
We are getting the hell out of here, little lady. Part of that favor I mentioned includes a hello ride out of this shit show.
Rosa and I both sighed in relief, thinking that this was almost over. And then, the power went out.
Fuck,
said Frank as the lights went out and the elevator screeched to a stop.
What are we gonna do?
Asked Rosa, her voice panicked. Elevator hatch, I said. We can climb to the roof from there. Frank clicked on a small flashlight, illuminating the elevator.
Good call, kid. Now, give me a boost.
I knelt and let him stand on my knee to reach the hatch. It swung open with a clang, and the old vet scrambled up through, before turning and reaching down for us.
All right, I said to Rosa. Up you get.
Then boosted her up into Frank's waiting arms. The elevator suddenly jolted as I was about to jump up. The impact knocked me to the floor as the doors began to be pulled open by too many hands.
I screamed when I saw it. I don't know how many people were bound up in that horrific knot of pulsing flesh, but they all looked at me at once and let out a howl of dozens of voices.
Luckily, the elevator had only partially reached the floor below, leaving a 2-foot gap between the interior floor and exterior ceiling.
Here,
yelled Frank. The pistol clattered to the floor in front of me. I grabbed it up and fired into the creature as fast as I could. The voices screamed, but it didn't relent. One of the longer of its arms managed to grasp onto my leg as I scrambled back against the elevator wall. Slowly, I was being pulled toward the other grasping hands and chomping mouths. I saw Sam there in its horrible face, and Miss Johnson, and several other of the tenants I've come to know since moving in.
Josh,
shouted Rosa,
when I tell you, shoot the arm.
The elevator jolted again. I looked up to see Frank and Rosa jumping on the roof. I heard them counting and jumping in sync. The thing yanked again, pulling my left leg completely through the door.
Fuck! Fuck! Fuck!
I shouted.
Wait, my leg is...
The elevator dropped. Rosa and Frank shouted, now. I leaned forward, the drop making it feel like I was floating for a moment. I fired the pistol into the thing's arm as I kicked out at the door with my other leg. The shot was good, and the arm released. I fell back against the wall as the elevator dropped to the floor below. I looked down at my throbbing leg to see that the arm hadn't let go. It was sliced off at the elbow, still clinging to my leg and trying to worm its way up. I jumped up, pushing the appendage off me. It flopped wildly on the floor before righting itself and crawling across the floor after me. I kicked it away and jumped up to the hatch. Frank and Rosa were already making their way up the ladder on the other side of the shaft. I tossed the empty pistol away and climbed after them as the huge mass of flesh began pushing the door back open and squeezing its way through. It got stuck and began ripping chunks off of itself to get at us. When I looked back down, in the red emergency lighting, the thing looked like it was crawling out of the pits of hell itself.
Guys, we need to hurry,
I shouted as the thing wetly popped loose and into the shaft. Rosa looked back and screamed.
Keep going, yelled Frank. We did. We climbed and climbed, hearing the countless slaps of hands and feet against the elevator shaft walls, accompanied by the moans of dozens of voices just below us. When we finally reached the rooftop, the helicopter was waiting, just like Frank had said. Two armed men ushered us aboard, and we took off into the night. 45 minutes later, we were debriefed by a Mr. Nealon. He was the director of some obscure government agency I've never heard of. Apparently, Frank had helped them out years ago with some kind of problem in Vietnam. It was all very hush-hush. Nealon told us that we were among a lucky few who had survived similar events as this. When I asked him what actually happened, all he would say was that it was an unfortunate series of events that led to an outbreak of an unknown origin.
You know I'm going to tell people about this, right?
I said, meeting his eyes.
This is bullshit, and the people deserve to know what's happening.
Nealon studied me for a moment from behind his round wire-rimmed glasses.
Who do you think will believe you?
I don't know who will believe this. Hell, I'm not sure I want to believe it. But I have to try. I am a reporter, after all.